All right. Well, thank everyone. Welcome to the Public Health and Data Systems Task Force. I'm Seth Pazinski with Office of National Coordinator for Health IT. I want to thank everybody for joining today's task force call. We have some guest presenters with us today, so I want to thank them for volunteering their time to participate along with the members of the task force. As a reminder, all task force meetings are open to the public. So your feedback is welcome throughout the call, either using the Zoom chat, and at the end of the call at around 11:50 Eastern Standard Time this morning, we'll have the formal public comment period for folks who want to make oral comments. I'm going to begin today's call with just a roll call of task force members. When I call your name, just please indicate your presence. So I'll start with the co-chairs, Jillian Haney.
Good morning, present.
Marian Malik.
Good morning.
Joe Bolton.
Here.
Hans Butendijk. Oh, thank you. Hans Butendijk.
Good morning.
Heather Cook Sinclair. Aaron Holt Coyne.
Good morning.
Morning. Charles Cross. Steve Eichner. Joe Gibson. Raj Gutnavari.
Good morning.
Morning. Jim Jurgis. Morning. John Kansky.
Good morning.
Bryant Thomas Karras.
Good morning, everybody.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Morning. Jennifer Layden.
Good morning.
Les Leonard. Hun Liu.
Good morning.
Mark Maristica.
Good morning.
And I think we've got somebody who's got their line open, so just, if you could mute your line if you're not talking. Thanks. Aaron Meary. Did get a note that Aaron was not anticipating being able to make it today. Alex Muggy. And for folks' awareness, I did get a note from Alex as well that she would be potentially not joining until later in the call today. Stephen Murphy.
Good morning.
Eliel Oliveira.
Good morning.
Jamie Pina.
Good morning.
Abby Sears.
Good morning.
Good morning. Vivian Singletary.
Good morning.
Good morning. Phil Sutherland. And Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right, that completes roll call. Thank you again, everyone, for joining. I'm going to turn it back to Arian and Jillian for their opening remarks and to get us into the agenda.
I will do the agenda. Jillian's going to lead us through the task force and discussion. And then depending on my mental status, I will lead us through the topics worksheet. So we are pleased today to talk about the F4 criteria, which is transmission to cancer registries. As a cancer survivor myself, clearly a topic near and dear to my heart, or my B cells, as the case may be. So we've got a quite esteemed panel to lead us through the current state of cancer registry public health data systems and the degree to which we have interoperability and data flowing to support those registries. As I said, then Jillian's going to lead us through a panel discussion or discussion with the panelist, at which time we will transition to discuss the topics worksheet and make some progress. And then as usual, we will go to public comments. So with no further ado, Jillian, I'll turn it over to you if you want to provide any other setup, and then otherwise we just get into the panel today.
Thanks, Arian. I'm grateful you were able to join us today. I think this is an area that is outside of my general expertise from infectious disease, but I do know something about public health infrastructure. And I think that cancer is in a place right now for us to provide some meaningful recommendations and really take note of lessons learned through establishing the infectious disease reporting infrastructure writ large. I think there's in general been a lack of funding to support cancer data transmission and interoperability. So I'm really hoping today that we can learn from our panelists and build on previous experience with infectious diseases and provide some meaning recommendations that will really support data quality. So with that, I will turn it over to Dr. Peter Yu from Hartford Healthcare. Welcome.
Thank you. If we can pull up my slides. I have a lot of information on the slides. I'm going to be moving through very quickly through that, but I wanted to have some more detail captured in there so this could be reviewed by this workforce at their leisure. So if we can have the next slide. What I first want to emphasize is the complexity of cancer data, how it comes from a variety of sources, and the relationship to vendors for capturing cancer data. So if we can have next on this, some animation here. So just a quick run through a circle of where our cancer data comes from. Certainly it comes from electronic health records, but our pathology information comes from the laboratory information systems, which is really where the start of cancer diagnosis begins. Next. Radiation oncology in the United States comes from two vendors. They're not part of the electronic health records. And so there's a whole different software and data repository for radiation data. Next. Our cancer registries, we of course report to state and federal cancer registries, and we have our own software to facilitate that data transmission. Next. We have a lot of research going on in cancer. There are some 20 new drugs a year, FDA approved. And so all that information is in our clinical trials management system. Next. Our imaging data is in a vendor neutral archive. Next. As we start looking to the future about wearables, the Internet of Things, that will be yet another rich data source. Next. And the last data source is genomic data or precision medicine, which generally comes from external laboratories. All this data needs to be pulled together. They are all intrinsically, inherently related, but they all tell only a piece of the story of the cancer patient. And in order to pull that together, we need to bring that into a data model. Next. So what we're looking at in our healthcare system is how do we adopt data models that organize all this data and then permit data science? So if we achieve this, then we have data capture and data representation standards, but we still have the issue of data transmission, the challenge of data transmission. So where does our data go to? Next. So of course, cancer registries are an important area and the focus of this discussion, both state, federal, as well as professional societies, registries for quality improvement. Next. We also share our data with a variety of academic partners for cancer research and for data science. So the MIT Sloan School of Management is one of the sources we use for predictive analytics and machine learning. And the last group I would lump together next is the large group of people who are interested in health economics and outcomes research, whether that's from the payers, industry, or other federal agencies. Next slide. So in terms of data models, where can we look to data models being developed for the oncology space? And there are two emerging data model sources for observational data. One is Odyssey's OMOP, and the other is the American Society of Clinical Oncology's M-Code. And I'll very briefly describe both of those. Next. So as I'm sure you all know, Odyssey's goal is to take data from a variety of sources and to transform that. really transformation is the key word, into the common data model. So source one, two, and three here might be Epic, the electronic health record data, it might be our radiation oncology data, but those sources need to be brought together into the common data model. Next. Recently, OMOP has created what is called an oncology extension. So OMOP was designed not for the oncology space, but to address that lack. The oncology extension has now been developed and is ready to be deployed. And part of this so an example of this transmission concept is what OMOP does is it looks at all the current vocabularies and lexicons that could in some way describe cancer diagnosis. And so you see the CAP electronic checklist for pathology reports and ICD-03. And it takes all those existing terminologies and that maps them to the standard that it anoints, in this case, the SNOMED CT model. And so the data elements from these other sources are transformed into the SNOMED model and captures a variety of concepts that each of the individual lexicons might capture, but may not have all those concepts like histology and grade. Next slide. The other emerging data model for cancer is coming from ASCO in partnership with MITRE, as well as with the FDA. And the approach here is to look at what types of cancer data are not captured in existing lexicons, such as staging, to really flush out the full data model. And again, as you can see, to have public reporting. Next slide. So this is a model of all the types of cancer data that are important to capture. And I would highlight the ones in yellow on the right, which are related to cancer treatment, whether that's chemotherapy, immunotherapy, surgery, or radiation. But as we start to look at outcomes and value, we will need to capture treatment details. And so this is some of what MCODE is trying to do. The next slide. ASCO's intent is to develop use cases for this common data model, and one of the ones that are highlighted is cancer registry reporting. Next slide. So I want to finish with an example of where a logical place would be to start if one was starting to look at standard data capture as well as data transmission, and that really would be with pathology. Since really that is where cancer diagnosis originates from, is the pathology report. And for the last 10 years, CAP has been developing machine-readable digital synoptic reports for 98 different types of cancer, which each report includes dozens of data elements. The U.S. adoption rate is now 50%. For digital capture of pathology reports. And so we're clearly at a tipping point now where we're poised to begin to use this data out of the electronic checklist for data transmission. Next. So while the ECCs, the digital pathology reports from CAP, address the question of standardization of data capture and representation, we still have the issue of data transmission to cancer registries and other areas. And I think this is now being looked at within the 21st Century Cures Act, which has really mandated structured data capture using FHIR. And this too has been undeveloped for several years. Focusing on transmission of pathology information out of the CAP ECCs using FHIR. This is now close to being ready for piloting. If I was going to look at an area where ONC might consider expending resources to develop, it would be on pilot areas for SDC transmission to cancer registries. Next slide. This can be read at your leisure. I'm going to skip this one. Next slide. And so the key takeaways that I hoped I was able to speak to a little bit is that cancer registry reporting should be considered in the context of a data ecosystem that is being developed and to understand how that ecosystem is forming and how it can be used to accelerate data modernization of cancer data. Next. that health systems are very reliant on a whole bunch of vendors, and that we need to bring those vendors on board if we are going to move this needle. Next. Data liquidity requires data representation and capture, as well as transmission standards. And last, next, that really common data models are, I think, where we have to go. And the promotion of these common data models and their uptake, pilots to support their use, is an area that I think ONC can focus on and help us with. And I think that is the last slide. Yes, it is. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Dr. Yu. I'm not quite sure who our next presenter is. Stephanie Hill from the National Association of Cancer Registries. Welcome.
Hi there. Hi, everyone. Thank you. You have my, there we go. All right, great. Thanks. So Stephanie Hill, I'm with the North American Association of Central Cancer Registries, or NACER. For those who are not familiar, we represent all of the central cancer registries. Those are the primarily state-based cancer registries in the U.S. and, of course, the territories in Canada. We also set the we established the data standards for cancer registry reporting. These are the data standards that have been used by primarily hospital-based cancer registries for several decades for cancer reporting to the public health agencies, the health departments, central cancer registries in all the US states and in Canada. These data standards cover everything from details about diagnosis, staging, treatment. They are, when I say that they're collaborative, so they are, the data standards are generated by not only NACER, but these include the CDC, their National Program of Cancer, the NCI-SEER program, the Commission on Cancer within the American College of Surgeons, the AJCC. So even though they all have their own, it all comes together under the NACER data standards. So I just have a couple of slides. Oh, that's right, you're for me. I'm gonna talk about sort of where NACER, what we hear in our working with our central registry. I also am the former program manager of operations for the New Jersey State Cancer Registry, where I oversaw all of the incoming data, including the data coming in from ambulatory centers under was originally called, and we still call meaningful use where I'm. So as you can imagine, there's just a great deal of variability among the states in how the reporting is being implemented from ambulatory and outpatient facilities. Hospital-based reporting is the traditional model. It uses certified tumor registrars. They have their own software. It is still primarily manual, but we're working to change that. But the reporting offices is really still relatively new territory. There's a lot of variability between how each state is implementing it. Most states, unfortunately, even when they are receiving data under meaningful use, they have been able to use it in a meaningful way due to some of the gaps that I'll address on my next slide. It has shown to be resource intensive for setting up and maintaining the secure transmission mechanisms, their provider by provider, and it presents a strain on already limited resources, in addition to the resources required for processing the data in order to incorporate it over into the primary cancer registry. Again, there's a lot of manual work that's involved, both on the provider side, as well as on the central cancer registry side. And again, it's a lot because we have the interoperability between the systems. Reporting requirements at the legal regulatory level vary by state as well. Most of them are pretty standard as far as what is required to be reported. There are varying degrees of definition on how these things are to be reported. So for example, if a state law requires physician practices to report using NACER data standards, other mechanisms of reporting do not satisfy their reporting requirements under that state law. So it's something to be considered. Luckily, the majority of laws that we've looked at around the states are a little bit more broad, and they do give registries some flexibility for what constitutes acceptable reporting. One of the reasons that some of them do require reporting in format is because there's that we get all the necessary pieces of information. Cancer is, as I'm sure you all know, much different from syndromic surveillance reporting, infectious disease. Cancer can go on for months, sometimes even years. Capturing the totality of that, that patient experience, it requires more than just a single snapshot at any given point in time. Next slide, please. All right, great, thank you. So some gaps that we've experienced is the structure of the data. It is primarily unstructured free text data. As we know, that's really difficult to make use of in a meaningful way without sort of advanced AI natural language processing tools to pull the necessary pieces out of the text. So the lack of standardization is a real challenge. Missing key information such as demographics, date and location of diagnosis, that's so important because cancer can be a lifelong chronic disease. So it's important for us to know where and when the patient was initially diagnosed with this disease so that we're not duplicating reporting, particularly if that initial disease was diagnosed out of state, meaning it's already being picked up by another registry. The patient now is being treated subsequently for the same diagnosis here in my state. We don't want to be duplicating reporting. So, again, things like patient identifiers, social security number. I know, it's not real popular to be sharing social security number, but it's so important when central cancer registries are receiving all this data from, as Dr. Yu showed, all the data sources that are pooling at the central registry to make sure that we're consolidating appropriately and making sure that we have enough information to match not just the patient, but at the tumor level as well.
Stephanie, I just want to be mindful of time. So,
okay, thank you. Sorry. So then, the transmission mechanism, as I said, setting up and maintaining these other separate transmission mechanisms when we already have mechanisms in place is a bit problematic. The data exchange piece, as Dr. Yu said, making sure that it's part of the larger data ecosystem. And then the incentives, in the past, what we found was, practices, they would enroll or declare intent, maybe even get some data into testing phase, but that was the extent of what they were incentivized to do. So it never really went any further than that. So all the work that went into setting them up never actually resulted in data coming in a consistent way. Next slide, please. So just, I think these recommendations are really just based off of the gaps I just discussed, ensuring that we transmit data in a structured way that uses existing standards. I think Dr. Yu listed several appropriate standards on one of his slides. does not need to be the NACER standard. We incorporate data from many different different standards as long as it's structured. Using an existing transmission mechanism, the CDC is doing great work with data monetization, and we expect to be using that a lot more for laboratory reporting and reporting from other sources. And making sure that we define what needs to be reported so that we have all the necessary pieces to formulate an entire picture of the cancer diagnosis. And just an idea that different specialties may have different pieces of information. There's not necessarily one piece that needs to come from everyone. We don't need radiation treatment from a medical oncology practice. I will leave it there. I could go on for hours, and I'm happy to at a later time.
I'm sure if you could stick around, people will have questions as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeremy Pine, I believe you're next from California.
Yes. Hi, everyone. This is Jeremy Pine. I am the Information Technology Section Chief for the Chronic Disease Surveillance and Research Branch within the California Department of Public Health. Basically, I oversee our initiatives around the California Cancer Registry and the California Neurodegenerative Disease Registry. Next slide. So I want to start the conversation with that there's obviously a lot of individual state registries that are out there. There are county-specific registries, multiple cancer registries throughout North America, multiple programs within public health that are all targeting direct electronic data, which makes this conversation pretty difficult. When we look at how those programs are targeting electronic data, there's actually very little collaboration amongst these programs, which is also a very difficult conversation. I mean, just as we're talking here, the cancer domain is massive in itself, but I think we need to be working in some ways towards some type of collaboration among public health if we're going to make any progress. Programs and domains working on their own just doesn't work when you're defining your own electronic exchange specifications and so forth. I think we need to do better on that space of collaboration. When we talk about these multiple priorities, often these reporting entities are being bombarded with requests from public health and elsewhere for electronic exchange. They're asking the question, well, what is required? What do I have to do? And then they're only meeting maybe that lowest common denominator of those standards that we're putting out. So in the cancer registry world, we're not really getting the data that we need. What we are receiving is something of low quality, oftentimes that gets put on the lowest priority to handle because it's very difficult to handle, very difficult to process. We're going to go target the easier data first because we're trying to meet these numbers around reporting criteria and then trying to push that data through to get things to research and so forth. So it's definitely an issue of getting high quality data into the registries from these direct electronic sources. Next slide. So as far as the current gaps, it's definitely a problem around this availability of high quality primary data from all reporting sources. I think there's a need to address the who of can create this type of data. We have the CTR workforce within the cancer registry realm. Oftentimes the CTR workforce, although is working in a separate system that's outside of the EHR realm, that's just specific to cancer reporting only. So there's oftentimes not any integration there. So it definitely needs to be discussed about who can create this data within an EHR system, make things available in order to enable this direct electronic exchange. I think we need to target around primary core data. This would include patient ID, demographics, diagnosis. We've had issues with null values in the current specifications. So, you know, facilities can transfer values that have nothing in them. I think there needs to be more around the mandates of we need to have specific data within those fields. Again, those null values presents data that is not really usable at the cancer registry end. And again, that'll get pushed to the side and we'll deal with that if we have time later on because of those issues. Of course, there are initiatives out there around common data definitions and standards, things like the US CDI, I think is really important here. The more that the cancer registry world and public health reporting in general can standardize around US CDI, I think is very good. That leads into that conversation of a primary data profile. So can all programs within CDPH use some type of primary data profile, and then have program-specific data contained within that? And of course, incentives for healthcare entities is also a really big part of the conversation. How do we incentivize these healthcare entities to meet a higher standard and not just target what has to be done and that lowest common denominator type of data? Next slide. And how do we make things easier? Well, we've already talked a little bit about the program collaboration component. When you look at just my world between cancer registry data and neurological disease data, obviously those are big conversations. When you look at the infectious disease group within California, the genetic disease group within California, those are also big types of organizations that we do discuss things, but I would not say that we're actually partnering together towards this type of work. So I think a lot more needs to be done there to partner together and kind of create this core common unique type of data profiling across programs even. And then we need to harmonize on our electronic exchange as well. So when you look at an infectious disease implementation guide, that can be different from a cancer implementation guide. So I think there definitely needs to be work done around standardizing across public health programs and cancer registries in general for what data we're requesting from the reporting entities. Next slide. Specific to types of interfaces, again, we need to address that data curation type issue. From the cancer registry perspective, we definitely know that creating that discrete data is difficult to do, especially to a standard such as the NACER standard that we want. Most entities don't have the time and staff resources to be in and creating this type of data that we ultimately want. We don't have public health coding departments, to my knowledge, within many of these reporting entities as well. There's an administrative assistant. There's other types of staff resources that are trying to get this job done to meet the requirements for reporting, but there's not necessarily a public health reporting type group that does this type of coding for us within these reporting entities. We talked a bit about the primary data profile already, and then that financial support for those implementations. Next slide. So the recommendations from my perspective was to address that data creation issue. I really think we need to do more work with EHR and EMR vendors to embed maybe workflows within the EHR systems, retrain our workforce that we already have within the cancer registries to be working maybe within that EHR or EMR system, or somehow be storing data to where we can enable these exchanges to happen for this discrete data. Definitely work with other public health entities to standardize on these core definitions. Work towards this primary type of data profile, which can be consumed efficiently across multiple public health programs. And then definitely work towards incentivizing these healthcare institutions to meet these higher level standards. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jeremy. I'm just going to push forward right now because we do have one more panelist and we're running a little bit behind time. So we have Nagarv Salahuddin and Chandrika Rao from the North Carolina Central Registry.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Nagarv Salahuddin. I've been working as a coordinator for Meaningful Use since 2014. So I'll just move on to the next slide. Just going to talk a little bit about the background and our current status with Meaningful Use promoting interoperability onboarding and what onboarding process we followed and the challenges that we faced. Next slide, please. So the Meaningful Use promoting interoperability program has been, it was implemented in 2014 and we've been working on it since then. And we tested and validated cancer cases from eligible providers. Hello? Okay.
We can hear you.
Yeah, okay. So we tested and validated cancer cases from eligible providers, particularly dermatology clinics from 2015 onwards. And at 2017, we onboarded 53 providers from 10 physician practice groups reporting solely through meaningful use. And these were all dermatology clinics. And we targeted these physician offices for electronic reporting because the diagnosis and treatment of melanomas can happen entirely in the physician office. And sometimes these patients don't go to any hospitals, et cetera. So it was easy to, I mean, it was a way to capture these melanomas that would otherwise not be reported to us. And in 2022, the number of providers reporting through meaningful use dropped to 40 providers from 8 physician offices because the EHR vendor through which this information was coming were no longer certified for the F5 criteria. And we saw a lot of gaps in the data being reported to us. Some of these offices opted to report through an alternative mechanism of electronic reporting because it does not involve vendor support or HL7 CDA format, and they just use our registry's database to report to us. And the data that comes through meaningful use, we have a multi-step process to, you know, ingest it into our database. There's lots of validation, editing, linking, consolidation to get that complete report and to eliminate all the data discrepancies and duplicates and to get that complete record into our database. Next slide, please. This is our workflow that we've been using. Once the data is exported into the EMARC database, which is the CDC's registry database that we use, our team developed this workflow to migrate the meaningful use data into the registry database. We link the EMARC file with the latest CRS Plus extract file using SAS to filter for matches and non-matches. We manually review for non-matches and remove the non-reportable cases and also go through a duplication process, and just only the files that have not been reported to us are coded, and we have to go through manual coding to make sure that, you know, we are not missing any kind of site, laterality, histology information, any of the, you know, the tumor specific details like Breslow's depth or the TNM staging category, et cetera. And after that, we use SAS to convert the Excel file where we did all the data editing into a NACER record layout, and then make sure that all the data items are there. And then we import it into our registry database. This is just a brief snapshot of the process that we follow. And based on that, we've had about 4,000 missed cases, 4,308 missed cases in the last 7 years, but it's a lot of manual work involved by different members of our team. Next slide, please. This is just an overview of how the data is transported from the physician office into the registry through an SFTP, through our SFTP into our database. And next slide, please. These are the challenges that we faced. It's similar to what was shared by our previous presenters. Main thing was limited uptake from vendors. One of our vendors said that any switch to 2015 implementation guide would be manual, only requested by the client. Only if the physician office requests that, they were going to do it. Otherwise, they had no plans of automating the change. And then we found many files were misaligned with the implementation 2015 implementation guide, which is the meaningful use stage 3. There was a lot of historical data that was missing, and because it was not interoperable with the EHR. Cancer reports that were being triggered as part of their workflow were missing. They did not have useful information. They were missing key data items like the cancer diagnosis, histology, behavior, laterality. And therefore it was not very meaningful when it came to us. And there were coding inconsistencies, like histology codes were incorrectly mapped, et cetera. So our recommendations would be similar to what the other presenters had suggested. Like, all the PHAs work in silos, so if there was some sort of collaboration, that would be very helpful. And if some sort of an automated triggering device in the electronic health record vendor side to initiate transmission of reportable cancer cases to the public health agencies, that would be helpful. And if the critical cancer data items, the SSDI values, et cetera, were getting mapped, that would be helpful when it gets imported into the registry's database. So with that, I conclude.
Okay, thank you very much to all of our presenters here. I certainly am seeing some common themes that are coming through here, as well as some opportunities to make strong recommendations. I know from my experience in Massachusetts, we did have some linkages with our cancer registry partners from infectious disease and utilizing our electronic laboratory reporting feeds, for example, to have data reported through us and then siphon them off. But it was really quite limited because due to lack of infrastructural funding, which really plagues public health. So I will leave it there. I see Arian, you have your hand up.
I do. So my transitional from life sciences to healthcare work was applying a clinical trials model to oncology clinical trials, and you know I learned in that experience that you know oncology has a rich history of applying advanced informatics, probably the richest and most advanced of all of the medical specialties, which gives oncology some advantages. The disadvantage that oncology has is that it's so unlike general medicine, particularly therapy cycling and therapy treatment protocols are generally unlike medication treatment in other diseases. And then, as you've mentioned, very specific data on tumor staging and pathology. I was struck outside of the last presentation by the lack of reference to the CDA implementation guide. And it sounds like one of the major issues is as we move to modular certification, the incentives to adopt any one particular implementation guide were low, but it also sounds like the CDA implementation guide had some disadvantages in terms of no built-in transport. And then we didn't have appropriate testing of data semantics that were coming through the implementation guide. I wonder whether this notion of using either the OMOP data model or the M-code data model or some harmonized OMOP, M-code, and NACER model might be a more useful target. I also heard mention of use of EICR and query retrieve, just also interested in hearing whether the US CDI formatted data that often is not specific to tumor staging or to cycle therapies is useful to be able to capture general information, diagnosis history, that kind of thing. So maybe an open suggestion to the panel to say, you know, if you had a magic wand, and incentives were appropriate, what structure of interoperability would ideally suit cancer registries? This is to the full panel. I've stumped them. Dr. Yu, maybe you can.
I think You made the point that everyone is so consumed with the problem of getting clean, usable, accurate data that, you know, questions of transmission are, you know, secondary, because if you don't have anything worth sending, why worry about how you're going to send it? So I think that's what we kept on coming back to is there's so much manual work in just getting the useful data automated, working with a whole variety of vendors to pull that together. And that's the area to focus on, before the data transmission. I know when I was at Sutter Health, we worked with the California Cancer Registry to test sending CCDA information from the pathology reports to Eureka, to their state cancer registry, and show that technically it was possible to do so with speed and accuracy. We still got stuck with, we don't have the data to that's we're sending over. And that's, you know, one thing. I know that Jeremy and California Cancer Registry have thought about, well, maybe it's just a minimal data set that should go over. And then if there's a need for more specific data, query can be sent back rather than asking everyone to send a massive amount of data and a huge amount of work. And that's another concept that, maybe we could touch on.
I think that's a very interesting comment there. I think that's one of the things that, you know, the infectious disease community within public health came around for case reporting is defining what that minimal core set of data elements that would be initially reported to public health and hence standardizing that across all of the infectious diseases.
Would that be, in your mind, more like the, you know, I'm imagining, and maybe this is naive, I'm imagining some harmonization of the OMOP research data model with M-Code and NACER to make sure that we've captured the required data elements and that we have a data model, not just a structural model. Would that be more in the line of what you're talking about or something different?
And yeah, I think so. So, Memorial Sloan Kettering and Dr. Belianca there in particular has led the OMOP extension for oncology. And Memorial Sloan Kettering has built taken OMOP as the base structure, added elements from NACER as well as M-Code to create a common data model that they're now mapping their information to. And because of our relationship with Memorial, we've been in discussions about maybe adopting their model. I have a call later this week with them about that. So I think that you know, in terms of maybe a pilot to see, is there a common data model that suits the needs of an academic center, an NCI designated cancer center like Memorial, but also the needs of a large community health network system, and then how that could be used to test data transmission, might be, a project worth looking into.
Thank you so much.
Ike, Steve.
Thank you. I think another component of the issue is looking at what fields are actually being populated by physicians within the EHR and how that connects with the data that's actually being exchanged. Thinking back to the certification criterion that vendors may get their products certified in the laboratory, as it were, but when product is implemented in the field, sometimes additional fields will be created or substituted, and without recognizing the impact of the creation of these substitute fields on information exchange. So that it comes back around a little bit, perhaps, to looking at where are we testing and when are we testing, and we may be testing the lab version, but not the production version, and that's interfering with getting complete, accurate, and timely data. It may be in the EHR, it's just not being populated in the fields that are being exchanged.
Another common thread. John?
Yes, keeping in mind the scope of the task force, I'm trying to keep between the lines, but noting prior conversations we've had about trying to meet standards potentially through intermediaries, and hearing about all the challenges, Dr. Yu's reaction to Arian's question strikes me that we're at a pretty basic level in terms of just trying to make sure cancer diagnoses are reported and then getting the right data elements. I'm curious, and I may have to ask this question in other circles, but I'm curious if any of the panelists are aware of work with health information exchanges to attempt to either A, capture diagnoses that were not reported, or B, fill in missing data fields under incomplete reports. Thanks.
Well, this is Jeremy, and within California, yeah, we've worked with a number of different HIEs throughout the state. I think the basic goes back to, we're still at that minimal case reporting type level, still trying to handle that problem of how do we generate the minimal case data from the reporting entities and push that out. You can have an HIE that's in between, but still they're going to have to query against something within that EHR system to also recognize that data is there and push that data forward. So if you're looking at a pathology lab system, let's say, we've focused a lot on pathology reporting in past years. You have that pathological diagnosis that you can reference to, but really in the cancer registry world, we're also looking for that final diagnosis, which oftentimes will come out of the oncology system. So these different points that Dr. Yu also pointed to, where data originates within that EHR system or that healthcare system. So we're having to look at a number of different places in order to kind of look for where this data should be coming from.
North Carolina colleagues, do you have any thoughts about using HAs or aware of any?
I think only the immunization measures are using HIE, and it's more hospital-related reporting that happens. Since cancer, we are targeting only ambulatory clinics, physician office, standalone physician offices. We did not get much interest with the HIE. So.
Thank you. My only follow-up comment would be that obviously it's a challenge that HIE's capabilities and depth of data varies, but I would assert that in some states, that would be a worthy conversation for cancer registries. And I'm making a note to go talk to ours. Thank you.
For those states who don't have as quite a robust HIE, I would look to building off of some of the infrastructure that infectious diseases has currently has operational, which are pretty robust. Bryant?
So I'll first on the HIE issues, we do have a robust HIE in our state. One of the challenges that we had is that folks who wanted to opt into using the CCDA cancer case reporting standard, their vendor had arbitrarily only enabled direct messaging for the reporting infrastructure and didn't build in any of the IHE standard HIE connection capability for transporting those messages. So those providers that wanted to couldn't. It was kind of a frustrating experience. The comment I wanted to make was just to emphasize, and maybe I'll ask Sandy to follow up, but leapfrogging ahead to what is possible next, MedMorph demonstrated that one could use the EICR infrastructure and capability, that core trigger mechanism within electronic medical record systems, to detect cancer diagnoses and transmit them to a cancer registry. We did a demonstration of that concept at HIMSS with a melanoma case. I believe there's a recording of that. So I think there's some forward-thinking possibilities of what we can do if what we have currently in the 2015 CERT isn't working for folks, we can look ahead to what's coming down the pike.
I just want to point out, thanks, Brian. I just also want to point out some of the comments about using the ECR infrastructure to support cancer reporting, and certainly, RCKMS, the triggering tool that public health is using is very scalable. I'm just double checking to see where it is with cancer reporting. And I've just got pinged that yes, RCKMS does have cancer reporting authoring capabilities. So I think that's something that we definitely need to explore. The challenge will be, again, I think those the triggering to be able to get that longitudinal data, however, but at least if we can like get an initial clean report coming out, that made it might improve things. Chandrika?
Julian, I want to just interject really quickly on what you just said, that the back-end ECR or the back-end FHIR listener being used for ECR is the same listener as what's being used for MedMorph.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out one thing, you know, like regardless of everything, the one of the main challenges that we face is lack of support on part of the physicians also. Because a lack of support and willingness from that group, physician group, to report.
Is that due to legal requirements around cancer reporting or?
Because of lack of incentive. And lack of resources on their part also. So
yeah, would it be more correct to say that you know individual oncologists and hematologists, et cetera, are not unwilling, but the EHRs that they're using don't natively support reporting capabilities?
That also, yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Hung?
Sorry, what
has been already said, which is that you know we are it's very tempting to leap ahead and think about the ideal model, but where we are currently is lack of sufficient infrastructure to capture enough data to generate that. And so I think that the focus at least initially is, and the ECR is definitely very tempting, is to be able to ensure that you know, for the people who are trying their best to generate the data and to transmit the data, that the infrastructure in place is there to easily do that. And so I think the rest will come, but unless we have a way for people to easily try to transmit data, you know, the best model in the world is not going to do any good because of the fact that the data elements just are not there in the infrastructure to be able to transmit that.
It seems like there's an opportunity to move both issues forward in parallel. Hans.
And comment that I also put in the chat is that I can see that they're in the way that we're thinking about directions of potentially a ECR-like approach, MedMorph-like approach, has a lot of value. But the question that I wanted to raise to consider is that, are we then really talking about the same EICR standard to convey that data? Or are we, as we look at registries, this is one that we talk about today, cancer, but as we look at registries generally, are we really talking about EICR or do we talk about registry-specific data sets and particularly where there are unique data requirements depending on the registry? So a lot of similarity that we should figure out, can we take advantage of, but the output, what kind of variations do we need to address for which we need additional standards, guidance, otherwise beyond what we have for EICR?
Yeah,
very good point. And, you know, this may be an area where we want to take a phased approach.
So, sorry, just Hans, I want to follow up with that because, you know, the EICR model would be beneficial in being standard and across the board if we adopt certification requirements for it. So it would get registries the upfront diagnosis and general health history information. It would not get, as I think we've been going back and forth, the detailed oncology informatics information on tumor staging, tumor path, cycle therapy, et cetera. And so this may be a yes and as opposed to an either or.
Agreed, where I think we then also have to consider, and that's where it needs to evolve, what's then the balance between what you submit at the time of trigger versus what are you going to query for consistently every time for a known set of data, and is that the most optimum way to do it? So I think there are many things to be worked out, is that what is that optimum flow and what standards do you need to then address across the board? So it might be an and as opposed to a...
Agreed. I hope everybody is noting Sandy Jones's comments in the chat. She's unable to verbalize them, but she is making some really, addressing some of the issues that are being raised right now. So we should take note. I think we will pause here and transition, Arian, over to the worksheet, if that makes sense.
Could I
understand there a lot of progress has been made in terms of commenting and refining recommendations.
Yeah, none of which by me since this last week.
Julian, I do want to make sure that people don't have a misconception. I don't think that the influx of infrastructure funds is cascading down to cancer registries. Our cancer registry took a $250,000 hit this year in its next 5-year block grant, which means we'll have two fewer certified tumor registrars.
In fact, probably quite the opposite, in the sense that we're taking money for general public health and devoting it. This has been a theme generally, right? We're taking money for general public health and devoting it for pandemic response issues. At some point, we're going to need to rebalance. All right. Yeah. We could take another pass through reportable lab and then go to syndromic surveillance. I think that makes sense. Or EICR. I'm happy to do either. All right. We'll see how I do through here. So I think we've already been through a bunch of this, which is that we want to move to the sense of the group is we want to move to the latest LRI guide because it incorporates errata modifications and updates off of ELR and fixes a number of the representational data issues associated with ELR. We want to go back and relook at the very long lab and order recommendation section that the ISP task force created and consider it as as a set of mechanisms for more broadly establishing complete end-to-end transmission chains from order to lab. I think one thing I'm not sure that we've got already on this sheet is the need to ensure that that order information that is going to laboratories include a minimum necessary data set that incorporates patient demographic and patient contact information. I see a number of folks who have done ads to the list. And why don't we go through the hands in order, starting with Ike.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that we're all still on the same page about the task force charter or focus, looking at what are the goals of certification, and not getting too far afield in spaces. This goes through a number of items. I saw that was one item that's suggesting that OMC works with the FCC on connectivity in disaster situations. We're looking at what might be within the scope of SANR reporting. But I just want to make sure that we've all got a common understanding about what's in scope.
Yeah, so maybe with regard to that, our scope is definitely parts one, part two, and part three. Part one is relooking at the existing F criteria for EHRs and suggesting any modifications for those F criteria for EHRs. Part two is contemplating certification criteria for public health data systems. And part three is considering data flows. So, in the list of things that you mentioned, I would contemplate looking at potential certification for intermediaries as really fitting the definition of part three. I would look at things like, and I think we earlier discussed things like SANR or vital statistics, as being areas that are not currently covered by certification and where we might want to consider that ONC work with industry to develop certification or implementation guides. And then as implementation guides are tested, then contemplate certification. But the main line here should be on existing F criteria and modifications to existing F criteria. And then, you know, anything that's sort of an incremental expansion off the existing F criteria, with a clear focus on EHRs, public health data systems, and the data flows associated with them, which, as I said, could implicate potential intermediaries.
Yeah, I'd just like to reemphasize that I think an important piece is we're looking at the data flow piece is not just on process for flow or method of flow, it's but looking at data quality issues
sure.
as a persistent issue, because if we're not getting good quality data bidirectionally wherever bidirectional exchange is occurring, that's not helpful for anybody in creating a bunch of unnecessary work and perhaps inaccurate decision making. So that if we include that as part of that charter, that component really becomes kind of a essential piece all the way through.
Yeah, so
agreed. I think content needs to be front and center.
Yeah. Completely endorsed. So what we're talking about for standards and implementation guidance is not just standards for the wrappers, but also data quality standards for the data that's intended to be transmitted. Hans, you've got your hand up.
Arian, and want to highlight one particular part is that between the, if you will, the part one and the part three comments and balancing those. When look at lab reporting, LRI, that is actually about to be published. It's in the pipeline in HL7 in that last stretch. It also includes data, demographic, other data, hazard order entry data that was seen as critical to public health and the pandemic response, where there is that align and optimize opportunity in part three. So I think that we have to balance between LRI for many components is the most current one out there, but there might be some data that based on timing of when this happens has opportunity to be optimized in part three and therefore quote unquote being removed from the guide because it can be done elsewhere. So I think we have to keep that in mind on how we phrase it in the respective part one and part three recommendations.
I don't contemplate that we would get to specific implementation guide versions in this task force. I would contemplate that we would get to general policy mechanisms and general recommendations for updating to the latest. And then if we think it's important to mention, as you note, that there are areas where there are specifics that are being used in ELR flows that are better served through an EICR-based approach. We certainly can mention that, and that's consistent with the comments that we had in the ISP task force. Aaron.
Yeah, hi. Regarding LRI and this notion of potentially certifying against LRI, if the scope of this group is to make recommendations about certification criteria for public health specifically, while I agree and support the notion of using LRI, I would worry that not certifying the senders and receivers on the same standard would be problematic and could result in further variation. So I don't know if it's in scope, and this is, I guess, a question to you and Jillian, as to whether or not we can also make recommendations specifically for the certification of our laboratory partners, as well as our EHR partners regarding LOI and LRI. So we're level setting across the board.
I'm inclined to lean on our part three charter, which has us contemplating important data flows as the avenue to look at, you know, a potentially broader use of certification. I think this notion of lab in particular is an ecosystem, and information flows from order to result through intermediaries that include national labs, local labs, PATH labs, state public health labs, and the APHL infrastructure. this is an area where we could focus just on one leg of that reporting, and really miss critical bits of the importance to public health as a receiver. So that's kind of where I would line up the conversations. I think we would be out of our lane if we wandered into making specific recommendations for how physicians order generally lab, or how lab LIS vendors generally structure their information. But I think if we look at the specific public health data flows, it would be appropriate for us to look at those data flows from order origination to reporting to public health, because I think we've seen that's been a critical part of the data issues that public health has been wrestling with. Is that kind of where you're thinking as well?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I concur, and I think that that is also a key component of the North Star architecture as well.
Yep.
And DMI.
Okay. Let's keep going through. I think we've already addressed a bunch of this stuff. Can we maybe go down to the bottom? Just go down to the bottom here on, and just make sure there's nothing new that showed up. So the last bit, I think we're still talking about latest LRI guide. If we can go up one, move all my bits around. Yep, I think we're really dealing with all the same concepts here. Yeah. Okay. Good. Okay. So let's go to syndromic, or let's do it. All right. So now we're dealing with stuff that we have yet to deal with. Maybe Hans, we can lean on you to represent your fantastic work here.
Just go from the top, that would work.
Yes, please. Yeah.
Let's see. First one. And I need to, is there opportunity to just scroll to the right just a little bit? The sentence is just chopped. I think this stems to a general discussion that we had, that this could be used as an example. Alignment on terminology. It's not only alignment on syntax, but wherever possible that we get alignment on content, where different jurisdictions use a different terminology. In this case, patient service would be an example of it. I think what we're trying to achieve is that wherever possible, where the concepts are the same, that the data sets, the value sets are consistent, commonly. Yeah. We can do it within jurisdiction and across jurisdiction analysis. That's the main theme behind this.
Hans, would it be appropriate to say that our syndromic surveillance implementation guide should be cross-mapped to the latest version of US CDI?
That would help, certainly. Yeah. Might not be enough.
Okay. So what we're recommending is basically that we do a revision of the implementation guide for syndromic surveillance. Looking at the latest version of US CDI, and then also looking at regional variation and making sure that we harmonize to regional variation, so that we got an implementation guide that, as we've been talking about, raises the floor.
Correct.
Cool. Thank you.
Remembering that the AD said syndromic surveillance messaging is based on the ADT messaging as well, so that I think there may need to be a relationship on that looked at as well.
Yeah, that's right. So the ADT generally can carry a lot of information, and you pick up the information that it wants to carry with the specific implementation guide. But I think you're pointing out that if I've got a registration system and it doesn't spit out the information that's needed for syndromic surveillance, we need to make sure that we incorporate the sending side in the certification process, as well as the actual implementation guide. But by the way, I just want to this is the boring part of our panel. I really want to thank our panelists on the Cancer Registry side. You're certainly welcome to stay through our laborious work through the spreadsheet, but you're also welcome to take your leave. Really, thank you so much for your input and the expertise that you contributed both directly and in some cases through the chat. So no need to stay on if you've got other things to do, and really thank you for your input. All right, go ahead, Hans.
Okay, next one ties also to the general theme of optimizing and aligning across data feeds, but this one particularly highlighting that there's data that may come in past the discharge that's still relevant. And I the comment below that is highlighting that as well. So here the recommendation direction is to work with jurisdictions, between ONC jurisdictions, align where it can be and complement with case reporting to ensure that the full data set is collected, which may mean is that there might be at this point in time better ways to get that extra data.
Channeling Jillian, you know, syndromic surveillance is anonymized or de-identified and population based, and EICR is you know, patient specific and reportable case based. But to your point, the complete picture of the population may include the initial population based data derived from syndromic surveillance, and then be augmented by more specific information that's coming in via EICR, ELR, et cetera.
Agreed, and it introduces the additional challenge of how, as data is being shared, moving from identified into de-identified space, is that as that data, some of the data has already moved into de-identified, how do I make sure that the additional data is associated with the correct patient that's already in de-identified space, where those flows occur that way? So it complicates the flow a little bit more on how to do that, what is the best timing? And once that becomes a question there, how, where is really now the optimized flow best suited?
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you, and you channeled me perfectly, Arian. I just want to say one additional thing is that, you know, we use the syndromic surveillance data very differently than we use the ELR, ECR data. It's by definition to look for emerging trends or, you know, to be able to like, have a little bit of visibility about something that may be happening on the ground that may be new. So very different use of that data set. Thanks.
Thank you.
And I think there may be some misconceptions about the nature of syndromic. The implementation guide does allow for initial follow-up and final updates to that syndromic case. And those are lined up using the same de-identified identifiers, if you will, so that you're updating a record longitudinally. So that concept is totally possible with the current implementation guide using ADT based. They're not ADTs, they look a lot like ADTs, customized syndromic surveillance reporting feeds. So yep. I think it's a very different animal than e-case reporting, and it ends up in a different end product in our agency.
I think the opportunity here is to use the existing, potentially updated implementation guide in more settings of care than we currently certify for. All right, Hans, keep going.
I think the next one we effectively have already talked about. So. Yep. Don't need to cover that.
Next one is our general comment that we want to raise the floor and make sure that there's a common floor that all public health can use. Good. Okay.
And we are now at 61. Yeah, so this one is a general, and I recognize that flows in the end are different, but still opportunities where we have, where we are in the identified space, in particular, where can we take advantage of those flows? So that's more a longer term overlap of streams where that can be taken advantage of.
Yep. And then in 64, we're dealing with this notion that we've contemplated that we should be increasing the number of drop points for syndromic surveillance to include, urgent care and primary care, as well as as admit data in the hospital. Good.
I really think that 61 is not a good recommendation. That we really, unless I'm misreading it. And alignment to me talks to conversion to a single data stream. That should not be what we recommend.
Yeah. There are
different data streams. And I would recommend we strike that one from our recommendation.
It works for me. Maybe an alternative framing of this is that we should, right now we have a set of F criteria, but we don't have a unified map of public health data flows. And it might be worthwhile to create such a map so that in areas where there is, I think we've talked about the overlap between ELR and EICR, in areas where there are overlaps, that we identify them, and in areas where there aren't, we clearly delineate that. So it might be worthwhile to contemplate a unified public health data flows map that looks at sender, intermediary and destination.
I think the other big thing to note about this syndromic surveillance is that the timing of syndromic surveillance. We get syndromic surveillance and are looking at these data several days in advance of when we would get a laboratory report or case report. And I think there are opportunities perhaps to use the syndromic surveillance data to perhaps complete a case report if information may be missing, or to go back. There may be opportunities for alignment, but it is really a distinct data flow and it's really a distinct data use.
Yeah, it being noisy and early and luminous is by design. Yeah. Okay, Ike and Hans.
We have multiple jurisdictional issues involved, both in terms of looking at public health data flows and utilization. In places like Washington State, where they may be collecting additional information, identifying information in a syndromic surveillance flow that may make it easier for them to match data, that information is not collected consistently across jurisdictions and it would not facilitate matching of records.
Yep.
And that's not just between syndromic surveillance and the EICR. That's across other domains as well, that there are still, in some cases, silos, in many cases, legitimate silos between different public health resources.
Thank you. Hans?
Adding actually to Ike's comment, I really appreciate that, and is that optimization of alignment where data flows, particularly when they are still in the identified space, from a data quality, data content, that's what data is communicated, where can we take advantage of that? Still believe that there are opportunities to look at that, very much recognizing the different purpose in the end that it's being used for, but just to overall enhance the flows from providers to public health.
Speaking of the public, it is now time for us to transition to public comment.
Thank you, Arian. Okay, so we're going to open up the call for any public comments. If you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the raise hand function, which is located in the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you are on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand. And then once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. So we'll give folks a minute to queue up to see if we have any questions. Right. I'm not seeing any questions. So we can conclude the public comment period, and I'll turn it back, Arianne, to you and Jillian for any last bits of conversations and to close out the call.
I learned so much about the cancer registry space. Really thank the panel for their valuable input. I think we got a lot to chew on and consider there. We are going to HAIs next week. And I believe, Jillian, Liz, correct me, but I think that concludes our tour through the F criteria.
We have one more. We have
surveys after that. Healthcare surveys. Thank you. So we have we have HAIs and healthcare surveys, and at that point we will have concluded our tour through the F criteria. We're also going to contemplate having a public health data systems technology developer present panel, really looking at many of the organizations that currently support public health and get their perspective on the general topic of certification as opposed to the kind of deep dive topics that we've had. And then we will continue our tour through the input sheet. We're gonna set October as our goal for having a strong set of draft recommendations and consider November as our opportunity, late October and the 26th and the 2nd and the 9th as our opportunity to do detailed tuning for the toward the final recommendations. So, John Kansky asks, what's the deadline to enter our comments in the tracking sheet? I think we're good through the first part of October of getting in the raw comments, but we need to start converging toward the middle of October to get to final or get to draft recommendations in a transmittal letter format by the end of October, so that we can deal with just more of the fine scale tuning and wordsmithing and making sure that we captured all of the key points prior to our last meeting at 11:10, November 10th. And even though we have a meeting on the 9th, for obvious reasons, our FACA coordinators tend to get grumpy if we're dropping, and our FACA broadly tends to get grumpy if we're dumping large amounts of new information on them the day before the meeting. So, we really should be thinking about getting to a good final draft on the second.
So with that final comment, please encourage all of you to continue looking at the track sheet and entering your comments so we can revise and move them forward. And I think we're about halfway through all of our meetings. So let's continue to stay healthy and go strong.
Yeah, making good time, not doing well and staying healthy, but we're going strong.
Thank you all.